in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining out
door. Come over here, kid. Where's up? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic. And you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You got to do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour. It's Michelle and a Jordan. Hope you've had a good weekend. Man, the Sebastopol Farmers Market was absolutely glorious today. It was as busy as I think I've ever seen it. And there were a lot of people with groups of people with big blankets put together, picnicking and eating food from the market and watching the amazing Princess Aisha dancing. It was just a wonderful, wonderful day at the market. And we're still in that sort of odd shoulder season where a number of late summer's foods are still available. Anyway, it's great. And, you know, this coming week, farmers markets will be a little bit different. They will be very busy on Wednesday. Most markets that are open on Wednesday will have more vendors than usual with lots of special things, including, say, something like pumpkin pie from Dominique of Dominique Sweets, who's been here on Mouthful several times. And there might even be puppy treats if Lark gets her way. And then on markets that take place on Friday, which I think at this time of year is only Sonoma Valley, that market will not take place because no one shows up to a farmer's market the day after Thanksgiving, and then the weekend markets will go on as usual. We have a really special show tonight, something I'm very excited about, and if you've been paying attention to Mouthful over the 17 or 18 years I've been doing it, you know, I don't get all that excited about cookbooks that often. I like to go off into other topics, but this book takes my breath away. It is called Kenvan, An Artist's Kitchen, Food, Art, and Wisdom of a Bohemian Cowboy by the late Kenvan Lyman. And we have his friend here, Doug McKechnie. Did I say that right?
McKechnie.
Oh, okay.
It's
now,
a Scottish name.
Scottish name. Very nice. McKechnie. And you are going to really walk us through the book and tell us about who Kenvan was. And excuse me one second. I'm going to shut this puppy up.
Well, Kenvan Lyman, I used to refer to him as the cowboy leprechaun of Utah. What an extraordinary human being. He is was a bit of a polymath and unfortunately fell downstairs almost 3 years ago in his home and never recovered. But before he went, he had accomplished two of his bucket list things to do, and one of them was to create this fabulous cookbook, and the other was to finish his album, The Utah Kid 2, which he'd done the first album 35 years earlier. So we're here to talk about Kenvan's cookbook.
But we can also go, we'll play a little bit of his music as well.
Yes, we
definitely
should play some of his music.
And we should say that the book, it's an oversized book. It is full of his paintings that have the most vivid, saturated color. One of them I'm looking at, which is in part of a pomegranate on a plate. What it reminds me of, do you remember in the 70s when they had just come out with color Xeroxes?
Oh, yes.
And they cost like $3 or $4 each, and you got this surreal, intense saturation of color. And I hate that Xeroxes now are, you know, color prints look so real. I love this. And that's what this painting looks like. And on the page is just a paragraph that he's written about why you should not use bottled dressings, which is a topic very close to my heart. So, and it's just, it's wonderful, it's sensible, and it gives absolutely perfect advice in like 5 sentences.
Well, he was a brilliant man. I met Kenvin in the summer. In fact, the very first day of summer, the solstice, June 21st, 1969, I was performing with my Moog synthesizer at the Family Dog of the Great Highway. My performing companions were Sandy Bull, Big Mama Thornton, and myself. And across the field of vision in the Family Dog was this extraordinary panorama, 60-foot by 12-foot panorama of visuals. And I turned around, and there were these two guys in cowboy hats up in the balcony projecting their light show. And it was a light show called Rainbow Jam. And Kenvin Lyman and his partner Richard Taylor had created a playable with keyboards light show that used keyboard-controlled color wheels and graphics that they themselves had created. And they were these amazing Western panoramas that morphed into sort of fantasy arenas. And it was stunning. And that was when I first met them. And we performed that evening and became fast friends after that. They invited me back to Salt Lake City, which was where they were from, the following year to perform in a planetarium with them, with my Moog synthesizer. And Kenvin and Richard were pioneers in pre-computer art. They actually painted with light long before there were computers. And for those people who happen to be knowledgeable about the early history of computers, the Salt Lake City area played a very prominent role.
I did not know that.
Later, Kenvin became the director of the Kansas City Art Institute's Computer Center, and he was very much involved with computers. And all of his visuals, which you can see if you go to Amazon.com to look at the book, all of the paintings that he did here were done on the computer.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
He would enlarge the pixels until they were identifiable as individual pixels, and then he would use a stylus and go in and paint. Unbelievable stuff.
Yeah.
And each one of these paintings are, to my way of thinking, is a masterpiece of sorts. And he came up with the idea that he wanted to do this book on Western and, in particular, Utah foods, and decided that he would make at least one painting per recipe.
Oh, per recipe. I was going to say one painting. There's going to be at least 100 in here.
Yes. There's at least one for every recipe.
And everyone was done on
the computer.
You know, I was looking through this tonight, and I didn't want to read and just have the text explain to me how to.
Yes.
I wanted to see what I could discover. And I'm thinking, what is he doing this? What's the medium? And I didn't figure it out.
Yes. Well, both he and Richard, as I said, were pioneers. Richard went on to L.A. and was the sort of wouldn't say mastermind behind, but the incredible spirit behind the Bob Abel Studios back in the 70s. Richard created the very first Starship Enterprise for the first Paramount movie Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
And Kenvin stayed in Salt Lake City and created a company called Dazzleland Studios. And he did CBS logos and quite a lot of iconic visuals for television back in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Richard's work can still be seen on film and television. The Columbia logo of that beautiful woman standing with the torch,
yes,
with the clouds behind, that's Richard Taylor.
Oh, okay.
And
we all know.
Yes, and he's still cooking in Hollywood. In any event, the cookbook was a passion for him, and he spent 12 years putting it together. And then just before it was completed, he had his accident, and everyone was devastated.
Of course. How old was he at that point?
7 years younger than I, so I'd say he was 60-something.
Okay. Still a young man as far
Still
as I'm concerned.
Still a young man, yes, indeed.
Absolutely.
Yes, indeed.
Talk to me about the cooking aspect.
Well, Kenwin was always very aware of the fact that the restrictions of the state of Utah created problems for him. He was a man who enjoyed wine, of course. Until very recently, you couldn't grow wine grapes in Utah.
You
can
couldn't?
Now.
Oh.
And he was part of getting that changed. Also, there wasn't really what we know in the Bay Area as a foodie industry happening. So Kenvin came from a ranch family down in southern Utah, or in the south of Salt Lake City area. And on the ranch, he learned they created their own food, grew their own food, and his mother was really his inspiration because she made her own butter. They had their cattle, and they slaughtered their own animals and grew their own vegetables, et cetera, and so forth. When Kenvin, one of his, I guess after his mother died and the ranch properties were divided up amongst the family, he decided to take 10 acres of the ranch and begin to grow organic vegetables all by himself. Now, if you've ever worked the land at all,
that is hard work.
It's backbreaking.
Yeah.
Backbreaking work. But he and his wife, Sophia, and occasionally they would hire an immigrant worker to work with them, created a fabulous field of greens and heirloom tomatoes and vegetables that he in turn would truck up to Salt Lake City, and all of the chefs of all the great restaurants and hotels got to know Kenvin really well because he grew the most fabulous vegetables. And that's when he decided he needed to put the cookbook together in memory of his mother, who was apparently a wonderful cook.
And he opens the book with, I mean, I was just delighted to find this. He opens the book with a chapter on butter.
Yes.
And making your butter at home. And nothing could have made me happier than to find that. And the photographs that go with it are, not photographs, the paintings that go with it are absolutely exquisite.
Yes. He was a genius.
And did you ever have his homemade butter?
Oh, yes. Oh, I made pilgrimages several times a year to go and stay with Kenvin and Sophia. They had a little cabin out and back that I could stay in, and they had their home garden, which was on the slope behind their house. And they grew vegetables there winter, summer, spring, fall. He had these containers covered, made with wood and covered with plastic where he could grow salad vegetables and things like that, even during the winter.
Mm-hmm. It's funny you say that there wasn't the foodie movement that we had in the Bay Area at that time, but in so many ways, what you're talking about that he did is what everyone is trying to get back to right now.
Yes.
So there's a lot of just intuitive, sort of, on one hand, an intuitive visionary quality, but on the other hand, it's just being close to the earth, which finally, people are starting to think that that's the right thing to do.
And his take on good food started with simplicity. You could take a couple of green vegetables, a tomato and some onions, drizzle a little olive oil and vinegar over it with salt and pepper, and voila, you had a fabulous taste.
Yeah.
And he was always saying, you don't need to get too fancy.
Yeah, and one of the things he says here that I just find so charming is talking about a simple salad and not buying salad dressing. And he says, just take some of the tender bits of the salad, little pieces of them, put them into a mortar with a pinch of salt, crush it up, and then add an acid, lemon juice, red wine vinegar, whisk in some olive oil, and you have something very compatible because it actually is the salad itself. And that's so simple and that's brilliant.
Yes. Absolutely. He introduced me to Bragg's Amino years ago. I didn't even realize that. And then I tasted that in soy sauce and went, wait a minute. Oh, I get it. It was really quite a revelation. He also introduced me to Dr. Bronner's
Peppermint
Castile
soap. Oh, yes.
For the first time. But he was always going for the simplicity and the unadulterated real thing.
The real thing. I think that's part of what makes the book so compelling. And I think on that note, we should get to know him vocally. How about a song?
Excellent. Back? Can you find Hold the Waters Back?
What cut is it?
I think it might be the last one, might be the first one, but I see. Well, any of them will do.
Sometimes our turntables can be just a little bit cranky. So, let's see what's happening. It's going to be Kenvin Lyman any moment.
Yeah, the Utah kid.
We hope.
UK too.
We hope.
Well, we're going to let our fabulous engineer Mike figure that out. We're going to continue to talk.
Excellent.
So let's progress through the book. So that first chapter is on butter. And there you go. Any book that begins with butter.
Exactly.
And then we have An Enchanted Table, which is about bread.
Yes.
A bold experiment. I love that he cut the chapter on salad, a bold experiment. And he also goes off into hunting. Did he hunt much, or did he have people around him who gave him
hunting? You could walk up into the canyon in Salt Lake City and run into moose and other such wildlife. It was certainly around, and I never saw him hunt, except for mushrooms.
Yeah, I know he has some recipes for venison and also, I think, for elk.
Yes. Well, living on a ranch, growing up on a ranch, that's what they did. They didn't go to the store to buy their food.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And every year he would have a huge ranch party before the ranch was finally sold, and 100, 200 people would come, and we would gather a few days ahead of time and maybe have a whole cow or a lamb or two and cook it there, make all the food, mm-hmm. and then at the party, everyone would have some of the fabulous food. He loved to cook for other people.
I'm looking here at a recipe, and I want to know if you've had it, because it intrigues me. Whole roasted deer liver with garlic and sage.
No. But one of my favorite recipes mm-hmm. is what I called Lyman Lemon Leek Soup. And basically, you would start out making a whole chicken soup kind of soup. Mm-hmm. You put the chicken in and cook it with two handfuls of garlic cloves. And when it reached a certain point, about an hour and 10 minutes, you take the chicken out and let it cool off. Then you had three large leeks, which you would quarter and then chop on the diagonal. After washing it thoroughly, and then put the leeks in with the chicken broth, and then add the chicken, debone mm-hmm. the chicken and add that. And then as it got to the end, you would take the juice of six lemons and add mm-hmm. that to the entire thing, of salting to taste, of course.
Yes. He sounds like we would have gotten along.
When the bowls were filled with the soup, et cetera, and so forth, you would put a dollop of yogurt, really good mm-hmm. Greek, thick Greek yogurt, and then the juice, another half a lemon's worth of juice, and then deliver it to the table. And it was incredible.
And it sounds like it would cure almost anything that ailed you at the moment.
Exactly.
Sounds really good.
Very therapeutic.
Okay, we're going to hear a little bit of Willie Nelson right now and see if we can figure out our little technical problems.
A long time forgotten, the dreams that just fell by the way. The good life he promised ain't what she's living today.
Really?
But she never complains of the bad times or the bad things he's done, Lord. Yeah. She just talks about the good times they've had and all the good times to come. She's a good-hearted woman in love with a good-time man. She loves him in spite of his ways she don't understand. Through teardrops and laughter they pass through this world hand in hand. A good-hearted woman loving a good-time man. He likes the bright lights and nightlife and good-time friends.
And when the party's all over, she'll welcome him back home again.
Lord knows she don't understand him, but she does the best that she can.
Now this a good-hearted woman loving a good-time man.
She's a good-hearted woman in love with a good-time man. She loves me in spite of my wicked ways that she don't understand. Teardrops and laughter that pass through this world hand in hand. A good-hearted woman loving a good-timing man. She's a good-hearted woman in love with a good-timing man. She loves me in spite of my Mickey Mouse.
It's Mouthful. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for sticking with us. We're talking about a spectacular cookbook, Kenvin and Artist's Kitchen, Food, Art, and Wisdom of a Bohemian Cowboy, just published from Gibbs Smith. I believe the price tag, yes, it is $50. And I'll tell you something. When I saw it, I thought it was going to be at least double that when I first saw it. If you want to buy a gift for someone who just really loves the world. I don't even want to say who loves food. I mean, certainly anyone who loves food, but the book is really engaging and wonderful. And, oh, that soup. I'm going to go home and make it.
And the amazing thing is you can buy it for less than $50 if you look around online.
Oh, there's a tip for you.
Yeah.
That's how that happens all the time.
Yes, it does. But this is a fabulous gift for anyone who loves food, and in particular for anyone who loves art. All of these paintings will be available shortly. You can, by page number, identify them and buy them as reproductions.
Oh, really?
In any size that you like,
uh-huh.
Which is really quite wonderful.
Yeah, that really is. And again, I've just turned to, it's on page 200, Fried Red Tomatoes. And again, it has that saturated early color Xerox look. It's really beautiful. you got a really special person. You could buy one of the paintings and give them the book, and you have something quite a spectacular gift. Another thing I like about this is anywhere you open the book, there's this combination of wisdom that resonates with mine. You know, salt, the most important seasoning.
Yes. Are you familiar with Redmond's salt?
Redmond's? I don't know. Yes. Yeah. Redmond's. It's got...
Kenvin.
Yes,
was
Redmond's
instrumental
salt.
In getting that salt to market.
Really? Oh, tell that story.
The Redmond Salt Company made big pink salt mm-hmm. licks for cattle and livestock mm-hmm. in Utah. And Kenvin, it was often fell to Kenvin to go to the the salt mine and pick up some large bricks of salt licks. And as he became older and more conversant with the world, he noticed that there were these huge piles of white salt off to one side. And he asked the owner's son one day, what's the white salt? And he said, well, we don't use that because everybody wants the pink salt licks. That's kind of an identifier for our company. And Kenvin went over and looked at the salt. And then he asked a few questions about the mine. They were mining 30 million year old sea salt from deep in the earth, mm-hmm. totally uncontaminated. But they were discarding the white, which also was filled with minerals, mm-hmm. because they were concentrating on the salt licks for livestock. Mm-hmm. And Kenvin said to the young son of the owner, he says, you know, if you package this white stuff up here and sell it as a gourmet salt, he says, you're going to make a lot more money than you are selling salt licks.
Yeah.
And by golly, he was right.
And they did.
Yes.
So they did. Yes.
Yes, they did.
Yes, I wrote a book about salt in 98, and that was one of the salts that
It's delicious. And actually, it's sometimes a little tough because it still has a lot of minerals in it, mm-hmm. and they don't always dissolve in whatever food you've got there.
Yeah, but
it's so delicious.
Yeah, it tastes really good. Here's a couple more. The fried red tomatoes, and then next to it, straight up guacamole. Avocados, garlic, lime juice, salt.
Simplicity.
You've almost made it as soon as you say it.
Exactly.
And the spicy potato cakes. It's a beautiful book, but it's a book also that you can actually cook from. A lot of coffee table books, and I think that you have to put this in the category because it's so beautiful.
Yes.
You know, they have 12 people in the kitchen, 12 sous chefs, you know, creating each dish. So it's not really a realistic thing for a person at home to use.
Right.
This
is totally accessible.
Totally accessible. And he even left there something I love in cookbooks, blank pages for two big blank white pages for notes. So you know, you make a little change in a recipe or you use a particular brand of something and you can make that little notation and remember to do it the next time.
Well, he was an incredibly intelligent and exciting person, and he loved to entertain and to cook for people mm-hmm. because the presentations. There are a number of pictures in the book where he's standing with platters of food about to be delivered to the table, and the joy in anticipating other people's enjoyment is so evident in that he loved to cook for people, and every day was a fantastic gourmet delight with Kenvin Lyman.
Now, and at the same time, and I think this is a lesson that we need to relearn, or a lot of society needs to relearn right now. He was an artist.
Yes.
And he made money. I mean, doing big logo, he was a songwriter, he was a singer. He wasn't too busy to cook.
Never.
We constantly hear people today, I mean, they let someone else do the cooking. And in fact, there's this movement, let someone else do cook your Thanksgiving dinner for you. Just pick it up already cooked at the store. As if just sitting down and eating something was the whole point, when that's not the case.
No, the preparation.
Yeah.
Involving your guests in the preparation as well.
Yeah, the aromas that build and entice you as you're cooking, mm-hmm. and just the process, which is so engaging.
The setting of the table, the choosing of the wines.
So he could have this really fabulous career, busy, children, farming, and still cook.
Yeah.
He wasn't too busy to cook.
Never too busy to cook. He loved the process.
Tell us a little bit more about his musical career.
Well, he was a guitar player, mm-hmm. and he was also extremely rhythmic. He once broke a flute of mine using it as a drumstick on a an upside down waste paper can when we were getting into music. He would be carried away by music, swept away by it, in the same way in which he would be carried away by color or carried away by the taste of a fabulous tomato. He enjoyed life to the fullest, and his guitar work was simple and yet very down home. His words, and I'm so sorry that we can't hear his.
But we will.
But we will.
We will.
He was a philosopher, and he was ironic and humorous. He was a wonderful, wonderful performer. It's hard. It's, you know, I miss him every day. Just an extraordinary human being. So few come along that are like our friend Kenvin.
Yeah, and there's a great picture of him right in the back of the book.
Yeah.
You can see that simplicity just in his
very easy
smile.
Yeah. That little the shack that he's sitting in front of out there contained a machine shop. And he built light show instruments, would machine these intricate machines. This was something that he was doing in the 1990s. He created what he called infinity machines, and they would project extraordinary visuals and color and shape onto a wall, but they were never the same. They were constantly shifting.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would sit down and play music to it. So,
and are these the the kind of light shows that, you know, people who went to a lot of concerts, say at Winterland or the Fillmore and that sort of thing, that would be projected during a concert? Or was it something that you would go more to actually see the light show like you would at a planetarium?
Well, it became more of that later. Okay. But in the beginning, when he and Richard came to San Francisco with their light show in 1969, he called up the family dog of the Great Highway and said, well, we'd like to come and do the show for you so you can see what we're doing. And I think it was Michael Covey, who worked for Chet Helms there at the time, mm-hmm. said, oh, he says, you've got to be kidding. There are 120 light shows in San Francisco today. And what makes you think you can do, I mean, seriously, we're not going to take the time to look at your stuff. And they were very disappointed, and they were about to Michael was about to hang up on him, and Mike Covey decided to ask this very important question. It turned out, he says, "Well, have you done anything that I might have seen?" And they said, "Well, we did a poster for Led Zeppelin." It was the one with the big Zeppelin. It was yellow, and then there was a blue one, and there was silence at the end of the line, and Michael says, you did that poster? Come on over. And that's how they got the gig for June 21st concert that where I met them.
That's a great story. That is a really great story.
Yeah. But it was just, it was just a hair's breadth away from going back to Salt Lake City when they mentioned, and they also did posters for the Grateful Dead, mm-hmm. and others, and you can see those online.
Now, is it when you said, is this the Kenvin, which website where you can see these things?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know.
Okay,
don't know,
we'll find out. We will find out, and we will let Mouthful listeners know. And we will probably do that before the end of the show because Mike is a whiz on our studio computer.
Excellent.
Why don't we take another quick musical break here, and we'll be right back on Mouthful.
Take the ribbon from your hand. Shake it loose and let it fall. Laying soft against your skin, like the shadows on the wall. Come and lay down by my side till the early morning light. All I'm taking is your time. Help me make it through the night. Well, I don't care who's right or wrong, and I don't try to understand that the devil take tomorrow, 'cause tonight I yesterday is dead gone, and tomorrow's outside, and it's sad to be alone. Help me make it through the night.
The things that can help you make it through the night is a nice tea, and we're going to hear about memory tea. So, Doug, it's all yours.
Oh, I'm delighted to read this. But before I read that paragraph, I want to read on the next page, 315, something that Kenvin wrote in his own script. He created his own typeface, and it says, "Somewhere inside of me, I'm an Asian. In my cellular memory, my hand knows how to hold a pot of boiling water like a tea master. And with my ancient eye, I see the same universal beauty that was there when Shan No Yu was as young as molten lava." Mm. Memory tea. For me, the combination of wild mint and wild catnip when brewed into tea gives off aromas that stimulate deep memory. They remind me of childhood, shady groves, vacant lots, and old cellars, sometimes stimulating primitive memories like ancient places in the collective mind, when people lived simple lives, lives close to the earth, like hobbits. To get the full effect, you must use the wild versions, the large scale, farmed, neatly packaged grocery store versions lack deep flavors. The soul of the plant. When gathering wild herbs, be careful they are not along ditches or fences that have been sprayed. If possible, cut enough to last a full year. Each fall, before the first frost, we pack a picnic lunch and make a day of it. filling large plastic bags with freshly cut mint and smaller bags with catnip. As soon as we get home, we spread them out on a clean surface, allowing them to fully dry in the sun so they won't mold. Once they are completely dry, we rub the leaves off their stems and put in each their own container with a tight lid.
And then the recipe is so simple. 2 tablespoons wild spearmint or peppermint, 1 tablespoon dried wild catnip leaves, 5 cups of boiling water. And the image here is really beautiful, and I love that reference to molten lava that first passage that he wrote. That was lovely. There are also photographs in the book, not just paintings. Tell us a little bit about that, because I know some are yours.
Well, I've been involved with photography most of my life, and whenever I would come to Kenman's, the interior of the house was always different. The exterior of the house was always different. And I would just follow him around with my camera and take pictures. And when he started farming, when he had his bohemian farms and grew all of his organic vegetables, I documented a day in the life of Kenman Lyman as he gathered his vegetables and drove back into Salt Lake City and delivered them around to the various restaurants and bakeries and hotels in the city. And, of course, I would always just give him copies of everything I mm-hmm. did. And I was very pleased to see when the book came out that a number of my photographs made it into the book. And even a couple of my photographs were used as templates for some of his paintings.
Oh, nice.
I'm very proud of that.
Congratulations. What a touching thing. And on page 307 of the book is a photograph you did of a light show, right?
Well, that's actually a print.
Oh, that's a print. Okay.
Yeah. But the visual, which is very modern, it's an extraordinarily modern visual, is an example of what his Infinity light show machines would project onto a wall. To me, they are musical. They are dynamic. And very 21st century.
Yeah, they're not at all what you might remember as light shows. They're just different. They're just really different and really beautiful angles. You know, there's hard surfaces and soft surfaces and surfaces that you can see the movement even in a still photograph. And he says something here, what do light shows have to do with food? The answer involves 1 foot in the past and 1 in the creative future. In the past, people thought of an evening's entertainment as something more than dinner, and after dinner as more than sweets. Today, I think of it as prime time for performance art. For one thing, there are less calories involved and more excitement. Musicians and poets are among our favorite guests because they can easily be accompanied by a visual performance, light show, turning the evening into something completely unique. I've included the light show in our lives for so long that it has become a family tradition, giving the evening a romantic air of the avant-garde.
Yes.
And I think there you really, he sort of captures that idea of bohemian cowboy, I think.
Very definitely.
Oh, and here's a picture.
Yes, that's one of my photographs. That's of the Utah Kid, U2, or UK2, as it was called, the band.
And there are, let's see, looks like 7 members in the band.
Yep.
Oh, including Eric Mueller.
Yes.
Okay. And why do we know that name? That is?
That's Wendy's brother.
Wendy's brother. Wendy Nicholson, who works here at KRCB.
Yes.
That is her brother. And he now, he has a jazz band.
Yes, he has a jazz group. And
based
he just
locally.
recently played at Yoshi's in Oakland.
Right, yes.
And when Kenvin needed a keyboard player, I brought Eric up to Salt Lake City.
Okay.
Sort of foisted him on Kenvin. Eric is an extremely dynamic and volatile human being who plays incredible piano, amazing technique, and incredible energy. And so he was an interesting addition to the UK2 band.
Yeah, and now you can hear him locally. That's great. It took Kenvin 12 years to write, to put this, we'll say put this book together,
because
it was
correct.
Clearly more than writing. There was a lot to do.
Yes.
Do you know how involved he was with actually the creation of How It Looks?
Oh, very much involved.
Okay, he had
in every
hands
aspect
on. Okay, great. I had that. It has that look to it.
Yes.
That it wasn't, a designer at the publisher who decided how it was going to look.
No, Kenvin Lyman was a graphic designer, as well as a chef and a musician and a light show artist.
So he did. The book is truly his. And Gibbs Smith put it out, and Gibbs Smith is based
in Salt Lake.
Salt Lake City, yeah.
Yes,
so
that's right.
Congratulations to them for putting it out. That's, good for them and good paper too.
Oh,
you know, it's they've treated the content with the respect that it warrants.
Yes, and you can wash the surface of the book off, which I always appreciate.
Yes.
In a cookbook.
Yeah, if, really.
And probably even the pages, if push came to shove, are able to be wiped away.
Yeah, and this is a book that on one hand you really want to cook with it, but you don't want to get it dirty.
Yes.
I think it's the sort of thing you want to leave it in the other room and have your hands clean when you touch it.
Exactly.
We just came across a trout recipe. I bet he caught trout.
Oh, yes. Well, Salt Lake, in spite of its situation, was only moments away from the wilderness, all around and surrounded by huge mountains. And, of course, Kenvin was a child of the 60s.
Now, one thing that we only touched on just a little bit, and I noticed it when I was reading his bio, and you mentioned it very quickly, he also made wine.
Yes.
You have to tell us about that.
Well, he struggled with the fact that he lived in a dry state.
Yeah.
And
we don't mean climactically.
No, we mean you had to go to a state store in order to get any kind of imbibing liquor of any kind.
Mm-hmm. And didn't you have to, buy a membership? I mean, it wasn't easy. You couldn't just walk
right.
in
you
any
had
time.
To sign up and et cetera and so forth. Now, things have changed since then. Now they sell beer and wine in restaurants, but you still have to be a member
in
order to have the alcohol. It's an odd bit of business. But his palate was extremely refined, Kenvin. And so he was hoping to start his own vineyard. That was his next project. He wanted to become a winemaker. And coincidentally, friends of our family, the McKechnie family, started a winery in 1998 on the oldest vineyard in Napa Valley. The very first vineyard in the valley was started in 1860 by David Fulton, brother of the other Fulton, who the steam... Robert Fulton, thank you. But they had never had a winery there. They always just sold the grapes to other wineries. And when the last survivor of that, well, actually, she wasn't the last survivor, but when his aunt died, she gifted half of the vineyard to her son and the other half to her nephew, my friend Fulton Mather. And Fulton also inherited the original house and the original wine building, if you will. And he decided that he wanted to start a winery. So coincidentally, you have the oldest vineyard in the valley and the youngest winery. Well, it's not the youngest anymore, but it was up until a few years ago. And Kenvin got very interested in coming down and being part of the crush and the bottling and getting to know the vintner and the process, and was looking forward to creating his own wines.
So he hadn't started growing yet, or had he started growing grapes?
Well, he had vines around his home.
He did, okay.
Yes. But that was illegal.
Oh, it's still, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good old Utah.
I know. Well, with all of his wonder and love of fresh vegetables, he used to come and visit here in Oakland periodically. And in one visit, someone who knew something about him said, well, it must be wonderful to have your own farm and create your own vegetables and go out and gather your stuff and make your own. And he was on vacation at the time. And he says, well, he says, quite frankly, it's also very damn wonderful to be able to walk across the street to the Piedmont Avenue grocery and buy whatever the hell you want.
Another very wise statement. Okay, we've got to talk about this recipe. Page 56. Because now here, keep this in mind. We're talking about a cowboy. We're talking about a graphic artist, a musician. And there is a section on hunting for venison. The recipe is poached eggs in flower petal soup. You just have to love that. You know, it's a combination. I mean, it's a combination of the almost ethereal with something as basically wonderful as a simple poached egg. And you can see the Asian in him that he talked about coming out. There's rice vinegar, fish sauce, black bean paste, bean thread noodles, miso, wild mushroom stock. This is not the simplest of recipes, but it is absolutely beautiful. And I bet it's really delicious too.
Oh, everything he made was fabulous.
So he didn't live to see the book published.
No.
And one of the things that happens when you publish a book is they trot, you know, you have to go to all the author petting zoos and, you know, they trot you out to promote the book. So what is happening with that now? I know you're involved.
Yes, all of us who loved him are involved with helping let people know about the book. We did have a release party in Salt Lake City in mm-hmm. September. But I mean, this is the internet age, and it's a very, for instance, I brought a copy to Alice Waters
mm-hmm.
and, in my typical stealth fashion, I just simply walked into the back and walked into her office. She wasn't there, and laid it on her desk with a note saying, this is from someone who's been in touch with you in the past, mm-hmm. and if you would do us the honor to look the book over and perhaps give us a word or two about your thoughts about it. We heard back from her staff. They were delighted to have the book, mm-hmm. and they said they would keep it in their library. Then I went on campus to find Michael Pollan, the author of mm-hmm. such extraordinary books about food, and left one in his cubby during the summer because he wasn't teaching during mm-hmm. the summer, asking him to respond about the book. And we haven't heard from either of them yet. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, as witness any of the reviews when you go mm-hmm. online to buy a book, everyone who has gotten the book mm-hmm. and read it is ecstatic about it.
Yeah, it's really a wonderful book. Just, I mean, anywhere you go, just spelt porridge. Spelt, water, salt.
Yeah.
With a fabulous photograph or a fabulous painting to go with it.
But there's another quote of his somewhere. He says, good food begins with hunger and then add salt.
Oh, gosh. I may find that. My book on salt and pepper is going to be reissued in... it'll be out in the late fall of next year, and I'm revising it now. I may want that quote.
Oh, it's
that
in
is
here.
So perfect.
I've forgotten where it is, but it's a wonderful.
So you can find the book on Amazon. It is $44. There are lots of really fabulous reviews about it. If they don't have it at Copperfields, then I think it's always great to shop at your locally owned brick-and-mortar bookstore if you
Absolutely.
Can, whether it's Copperfields, Reader's Books. We have really good bookstores in Sonoma County. They can always order it. The publisher is Gibbs Smith. Did we find the website? No, we haven't found the website yet. So what I'm going to do is we're going to get some of Kenvin's music. We just had a little technical difficulty with that today. I'm going to drop in those songs. We'll take out Willie Nelson, drop in those songs, and I will. We will rebroadcast this during one of the holiday Sundays that we take off, because we always do that, usually once in December. So we'll do that, and we will include in that the website for seeing this art. But also, Mouthful has its Facebook page. I will put links to the website up on the Facebook page, and I'll also put up some information about the book itself. Doug McKechnie, did I say? Yes, I said it right this time. Thank you so much. You live in Oakland. You came up for Mouthful. We really, really appreciate it. And we just love knowing about this book.
Well, it has been my distinct pleasure. Thank you.
You have a great week. Have a fabulous holiday. I hope you're doing something really wonderful that includes a long time in the kitchen and a longer time around the table. Meet me back here next week for another yummy episode of Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour, here on the new 91 KRCB.
Children, it is plain but true. God knows if a preacher preaches long enough.
Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour, is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan, who also selects Mouthful's music. Live episodes are engineered by Michael Young and occasionally by Mary Moore Campagna. Mark Fuller is Mouthful's recording and post-production engineer. Podcasts are available at iTunes and krcb.org. For more information, to suggest a guest, and to find out how to be a guest yourself, email catsmilk@sonic.net or send a message via Mouthful's Facebook page.
Listen to what the preacher said. To the Lord, praises be.